America's founders created the framework where people with different views are able to express those views within reason. But they say politics makes strange bedfellows. How is it that Black Lives Matters, that is BLM, is supporting Hamas, which is dedicated to wiping Israel off the map? Bob Woodson is a civil rights leader for decades now. He's the founder and president of the Woodson Center, based in the D.C. area, which has done a lot of good and positive work of urban renewal. He thinks that BLM's support of Hamas is, quote, end quote, ignorant and destructive. Bob Woodson wrote a piece in Newsweek recently to which we'll link. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and we welcome Bob Woodson to the program. Thank you, Mr. Woodson, for being with us.
Pleased to be here.
Okay. So tell us what prompted you to write this article in Newsweek about Black leaders supporting Hamas.
Well, first of all, Black Lives Matter has been a nemesis to the Black community since it started. It has never develop programs or express views that are supportive of Black interests. In fact, it's been hostile to those interests. It is associated with Marxism. They advocate positions that are hostile to the interests of Black America, and they are also exploiting the rich legacy of the civil rights movement and their false pretense that they are represent the interests of Black Americans. So any attempt to vilify America's interest or America's action, Black Lives Matter is there to just give credence to it. And so that's why I wanted to make clear that they do not represent the Black community at all.
Okay, that's the first point. And then as far as their support of Hamas, what are your thoughts?
Well, they support Hamas because anything that is anti-American, anything that brings into question the legitimacy of America's values, that's what they do. So supporting Hamas is just another extension of their Marxist views. They're hostile to American virtues and values. And so this is, again, another political ploy of Black Lives Matter to support any interest that is hostile to American interests. You will find Black Lives Matter signing up for it.
Okay. Here's a question for you. You said earlier that Black Lives Matter is hostile to the interests of Blacks, you know, at large. So let's take one example. Fatherlessness has been a crisis in American culture. It's an acute crisis for the Black community. How does Black Lives Matters, what do they think about fatherlessness? And please go ahead and wax eloquent, because I think this is probably the single most important thing that we needed to get right as Americans, and we're not getting it right. It is, it's off the radar, if you will.
Well, first of all, the basic premise of Black Lives Matter and sort of these racial identity, I call them, race hustlers, is that the problems facing large swaths of Black America, where 70% out of wedlock births, out of control crime, unemployment, health crisis in these communities, that all of these problems that are happening in inner city low income communities are somehow a legacy of America's racial past. It's somehow these problems existed because of the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow, and that America, therefore, is systemically racist to its core. And until and unless white supremacy is defeated, then you cannot find justice for Blacks. Well, my own personal life is a living testimony to the lie. I was born in 1937, at the end of the Depression, in a low-income Black community in South Philadelphia. 98% of those households had a man and a woman raising children. Elderly people could walk at night in those communities without fear of being assaulted by their grandchildren. I never heard a gun fired up through and including high school. Never heard of a child being shot in their crib. And so all of those problems that we were talking about are not a legacy of slavery and Jim Crow. It's the legacy of the policies of the 60s, because the Woodson Center has released a volume of book. It's called Red, White, and Black, Rescuing America from Revisionist History and Race Hustlers. And in there, we document the fact that when that blacks have been making steady progress every decade after slavery. When we were denied access to hotels, we built our own. I can name six right off the top of my head: the Wallahatchie in Atlanta, the Carver and Calvert Hotels in Overtown, Miami, the St. Charles in Chicago, the St. Teresa in New York. When we were denied access to our hospitals and medical schools, we built our own. So we have a rich tradition of achieving in the face of discrimination, but all of these self-help efforts, the progress that we made, came to a halt in the 60s with the poverty programs. It's ironic that at the very time when black elected officials were placed in charge of running these cities, the great promise was conditions will improve for all blacks. But that proved to be not true, because most of the crime and violence and despair that you're seeing in the inner cities are in most of the cities that are run by black politicians for the last 50 years.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So this is part of the problem is, so the problems are not racial. The problems are bad policies in the 60s that had the consequence of destroying the black family. The black family, we have a higher marriage rate in the during the Depression between 1930 and 1940 than any other group in society.
And what is the link between fatherlessness and all these maladies you just described, the crime, et cetera?
When you saw as from the 1960s, when the government got into welfare policies and detached work from income, Cloud and Piven, these were social scientists at Columbia University School of Social Work. They said when government begins to offer welfare benefits as an alternative to fatherlessness, you're going to see a decline in the two-parent households. And with that decline, you're going to see increased school dropouts, drug addiction, all of the things they predicted. And so in the course of from the 1960s of the poverty programs, for the next 20 years, you saw a dramatic decline in fatherless homes and with an uptick in violence on the part of young people. The incarceration rates from blacks in the turn of the century up until 1960 was 25%. It shot up like four times that in the course of just 10 years. So there's a clear correlation between fatherless homes, when welfare replaced fathers in homes, you separate work from income. These communities became destabilized and violence has risen. More blacks are killed by other blacks in 1 year today then were killed and lynched by the Klan over a 40-year period.
So fathers do make a difference in the home.
They make a huge difference in instilling values, particularly to young men, that fathers are critical. And again, I use, if you look at the numbers, in 1930 to 1940, when the unemployment rate for all Americans was 25%, it was 40% for black America. But even in the midst of the Depression, when racism was enshrined in law, the marriage rate in the black community was higher than any other group in society. And that's when I told you, during that period between the 30s and 1960s, that elderly people were not mugged the way they are today. Children were not shot in their cribs. All of these declines occurred can be associated with the decline in the fatherless homes, or the increase in fatherless homes.
Do fathers make a difference as far as the children when it comes to education, not just crime, education?
Absolutely. That's why when you look at these people, they say, the race grievance people tell you there's disparities. and those disparities in terms of income and education are associated with racism. That's not true. You cannot generalize about any group of people. In fact, if there are factors other than race that account for your standing, your economic standing, for instance, a married black couple who stays together and marries are probably only 10% likely to go into poverty versus those who are single-parent households. If racism were the single couple, why aren't blacks suffering equally? Blacks who are married and go to school and delay a childbirth until after marriage, when they follow this success sequence, they don't end up in poverty. And so we just have to, as someone said, either we accept truth. If we can't accept fact-based truth, then lies become normal.
Would you say then, in effect, the civil rights movement has been hijacked?
It absolutely been hijacked. I was a part of that civil rights movement, having led demonstrations in the 60s in Westchester, Pennsylvania, the home of Barrett Rustin. And I can tell you that what Dr. King was talking about is being judged by the content of our character. Well, character is no longer how we are now to be judged, according to even the civil rights leadership. We should be judged by the color of our skin. And that's where affirmative action and all these other efforts to tip the scales or demands are made that any time blacks apply, that the standards have to be reduced in order for blacks to qualify. And this is harmful to the whole notion of equal opportunity. What we fought for was an equal opportunity to compete, not 10% of the spoils.
One thing that's disturbing to see, and I'm speaking as a white person here, but I just don't get this, is the vilification of accomplished black men they happen to be conservative. But they're, Clarence Thomas, for example. My goodness, this man's, look at his legal reasoning, look at his decisions, his dissents, his positive decisions. The guy's brilliant. And yet he's vilified as if he's some sort of villain. Ben Carson, my goodness, this man is such an accomplished medical doctor. But, he worked for the Trump administration, so he's bad. He's bad. Now, how do we assess this? I don't agree with that mentality.
You got to understand, a lot of this criticism is coming from the elites. It's not coming from ordinary blacks. There's a huge schism in the black community people don't realize. For instance, the elite leadership believes in defund the police. 80% of blacks polled do not believe in defund the police. 60% of blacks do not believe that racial discrimination is a principal barrier to their success. So there's huge differences. As a friend of mine, Delano Squires, properly described it, a lot of these narratives are being driven by guilty elite whites who are seeking absolution from problems that they didn't create, and guilty white blacks who are seeking absolution from injustice that they never committed and they never suffered. And so I think this whole issue of race is good being driven by elites, and they don't give certainly the mainline media doesn't call up a Bob Woodson of this world or Ben Carson and says, I want to interview you to get your views on these issues. No. They instead just call on people who are race grievance merchants.
Mm. Wow. And if the problems were ever solved, then those merchants would be out of a job or out of income. WoodsonCenter.org for more information. Woodson is spelled W-O-O-D-S-O-N. Bob Woodson. Thank you, sir. All the best.
And thank you so much.